Some say enlightenment happens all at once. Others say it's a gradual thing. Dude, I have no idea. I'm Ancy McLean, and this is Resisting Enlightenment. This is the podcast that unwisely revisits our most embarrassing, awkward moments and offers nothing but impotent commiseration.
Hey everybody, it's Resisting Enlightenment.
Wow, what is that? That is
this
cool
is,
as hell.
Deer grunter, a mule deer grunter. But it sounds like, you know, a bass duck call. And you can extend it out.
That's my good friend Bob Armstrong. With one of his many musical toys, he can make music with just about anything he picks up. And there he is with a moose call, making some music with it. It sounded great. Hung out at his house a couple weeks back, and we talked about everything. I recorded about 2 hours of conversation. I'll only include about 20 minutes here, but maybe use some more later on, you know, because he's a deep well of wisdom, inspiration, and just creative energy, man. I just love hanging out with this guy. He's an artist. He's a musician. He's a philosopher. Bob was one of those guys on the ground floor of the underground comic scene of the late 60s, early 70s, and did his Mickey Rat comics that are extremely popular. And, you know, and just anything having to do with old music, old movies, old toys, old art, man, Robert is a walking encyclopedia. So let's go ahead and jump into the conversation with my good friend, Bob Armstrong.
So, Bob, what's your deal?
Yeah, what's my deal? How do I begin to explain what I am?
You know, that's the thing. It's, creative people often are not content with just one road. You have many. So, what? Like, if you're...
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. Let's listen to the clock. That's awesome. It's 10 o'clock here in Winters, California.
Yeah. We're going,
all is well.
Going back in time. The old Seth Thomas on the wall tells us it's 10 o'clock.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So every hour on the hour.
Bing, bang, bang, yeah.
That's beautiful. And then that ticking.
It's the heartbeat of the house.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I love it. But so, yeah, if you were to have, if you had a business card and said, Robert Armstrong.
What do I do?
What's the subtitle?
You know, I... cartoonist, painter, musician, jolly good fellow, and big galoot. And it's just all, I kind of mix it all up. You know, it's hard for me to just do one thing and have one title that sums it all up, you know.
You're Robert Armstrong.
I'm Robert Armstrong.
Not sad.
No. But... you know, I got various interests that just keep me going, and I try to diversify my energies. You know, like every day, it's like spend some time working with the music, playing string instruments, or just listening to music. And then there's the side of me that works on visual art. You know, a visual guy as well as being a very audio guy. So it's sounds and sights keep my world going, you know, like, yeah. And
you see and hear the world.
Absolutely. You know, like, it's fascinating stuff. And then, I don't know, interpret it the way I do, you know, like I have drawn since I was a young kid and never stopped. Yeah. And then been obsessed with music since I was really young. And then even before I started playing an instrument, it's just like music just had this power over me. You know?
What do you remember that moment? What was that first moment for you where, this is amazing?
Yeah, I remember, well, I grew up in Pasadena, and every year we watched the Tournament of Roses. We used to call it the Tourniquet of Roses, the Rose Parade, and it was just blocks from where I grew up and walked, you know, as a young kid watched these parade bands going, marching bands, and I'd be just excited hearing live marching band music. And then I remember hearing like mass bagpipers going by and watching that with the drums and the bagpipes, and just, I was jumping up and down with excitement. And hearing any kind of live music was great. And then also recorded music. I remember hearing records my parents had. Folks had this Record of the Month Club thing going, Columbia Records. And once they got sent this record of Louis Armstrong and the All-Stars in Europe, it was called Ambassador Satch. And my dad liked to play that record. It was my first exposure to Louis Armstrong, and I still remember just loving that. There's a version of the old song, the old tune, Dardanella, played on there by the clarinetist Darnell Howard. And I just loved that. I was probably, you know, 6 years old and just play that again. I, you know, wow. Love that. And just like music just had this effect on me.
You had a really good first impression of music, a first exposure to music. That was very, Louis Armstrong.
Did, yes. And
started at the top. With me, it was a John Davidson appearance on Merv Griffin.
Okay. Right.
Resisting Enlightenment is brought to you by Mediocre Guitar Player Magazine, helping bad guitar players get a little better since 1978. Some of the features you can count on are how to play an F chord without using so many fingers, avoiding rehearsals without looking like a total slacker, tuning, how necessary is it really, and picking out the right guitar for someone who has no interest in getting very good. I've been honored to be on the cover of Mediocre Guitar Player magazine 5 times. It's not the record. Singer-songwriter Daryl Newsome, the Antioch Cowboy, has been on the cover 7 times, if you count the mugshots from his public intoxication bust, which appeared in a small box in the bottom right-hand corner last year sometime. Mediocre Guitar Player magazine, when you're serious about other things besides playing the guitar all the time. And we're also sponsored by Stubby's Discount Fireworks. Stubby's wants to encourage responsible fireworks use and wishes to distance himself from the YouTube video that went viral last week of local teenagers lighting bottle rockets from the cracks of their butts. Stubby is seen laughing in the video, indeed, but says he had nothing to do with the incident, which resulted in burns on the butt cheeks and genitals of 3 of the boys, who neighbors all agree ain't quite right in the head anyway. The bottle rockets, a very popular Hail to the Chief brand that's on sale this week, just 10 for $14.99, buy 5, get 1 free, are not intended for such nonsense and tomfoolery. As of this broadcast, the video, entitled Check Out These Dumbasses, has more than 17 million views, and Chuck Spantry, the 17-year-old boy who posted it, is reportedly negotiating a movie deal with Jackass creator Johnny Knoxville. Stubby's Discount Fireworks. Light responsibly, people.
My folks had this record in the 50s called Your Father's Mustache in Hi-Fi. And it had a big picture of this guy with a mustache, close-up photo of this guy. And what it was the Albert White Gaslight Orchestra, And these were like all studio guys, like radio, TV musicians, put together in the studio and given these old charts of like ragtime era stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like circa 1900, 1910. And I still have that LP. And it was really good. And they're just playing as what you would hear like a concert band playing.
And that was a song, Your Father's
Song. Yeah, well, it was just a title. It was a corny title. But everything on there was like these great old tunes from the period. And they're playing from old charts, old music. And these are really good players, so they just could read it. But they had a feel for it. And it actually still holds up now. This thing that was recorded like in, I don't know, 1955 or something. And these guys recreating, keeping this going, playing this old music. And I, wow, this is wonderful. I love this old stuff. So the twig was bent, you know, and then I just fell in love with old music, you know. Like, I remember years later when the Kingston Trio was popular. This is, I don't know, like 1957, 58, and the Limelighters and the folk music thing was starting, and guitars and banjos. I just love that.
You'd strike me as a guy who saw someone play an instrument, and you just said, well, I have to play that instrument too.
Yes.
That's because you play everything.
Yeah. Well, not everything, but
you play piano as well?
A little bit. I play piano. Yeah,
I've only heard you play string instruments.
Yeah, I tried to play. When I was a teenager, I became obsessed with Harlem Stride style piano. I'd heard James P. Johnson and Fats Waller on a record. Oh, how do you do that?
Rolling, bouncing,
driving left hand. I actually took some lessons for a while from this old lady in Pasadena named Tookie Goff. And she was like an old lady, an old white woman, but she could really play like hot stride piano. And she'd been on the radio. She said she had played with Red Nichols on the radio and people like that. And she was great, but it was just so hard. I didn't have that much piano under my belt beforehand. And she's showing me the stuff that was technically so difficult, like, I just had to bail out. I can't do this, you know.
If you're as, I'll say, diverse as you are, and you're on the go and you're traveling, you know, piano is not a mobile instrument. It certainly wasn't then. Now you can get a Casio keyboard and take it
where
you want. But I think that was a hindrance for a lot of people that wanted to play piano, but like, you just can't take it everywhere, you know?
You're
stuck in your house, and that's the only place you're going to be able to play.
I think I went through it where I just wanted to play everything. I remember even, I bought this old violin at an antique store, and I thought, oh, I want to learn how to play fiddle.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, like 15 or something. And I had friends that were really good. I played fiddle, that learned violin when they're young, and then they got into fiddle, and they were just so far beyond me. It was just discouraging. I thought, I can't do everything. I'll just stick with guitar and banjo and like that. Then I'd heard these old blues records with guys playing bottleneck slide guitar. I thought, oh, I love this stuff. You know, Tampa Red and Sun House and Robert Johnson, that sort of thing. And how do they even do that? And there was no, like, videos back then, instruction books like there are now. And this is still, like, the mid-60s. I just kind of faked it. I got piece of brass tubing for my finger, I think, I started out with a pill bottle or something in my finger, and just kind of faked it until I figured out how to do it the right way. And then the same thing happened years later. I'd find these old 78s of these Hawaiian records around Southern California, and then just fell in love with this stuff. You know, these old records by Sol Hole, P.E., and the Kalamas Quartet, and Sam Kues, and this stuff, and no one else really cared about this stuff. I did. And how do they do that? You know, and I just kind of figured I faked it my way into it.
You feel like maybe you were born in the wrong era?
Yes. I really just felt like a total anachronist. I'm just out of phase here, out of step, you know. And wondering why is it I have this strong affinity to a certain age. You know, it just grabs me. And I have other friends that are collectors of old stuff, appreciators of old music and records. They feel the same way. Like, why is this? Why do we feel a strong pull for this era where you almost hate living in the era that you're living in, but you'd rather be living. It's totally over romantic, you know, saying like, oh, if I could only go back to those days, well, it'd be horrible then too, probably for you. But you're just in love with this period of time that came well before you were born. And so you just romanticize the whole thing. But we have this option of looking back. We can hear all the great stuff from that era and still be living in the present era. You know, it's kind of a nifty deal.
I've met these people, though, and some of them very young, who they feel this affinity to another era that's, you know, my wife's son, Jacob, she says when he was little guy, he loved the big band music. And would see these World War II vets and go and shake their hand. You know, he's 4, 5, 6 years old, and just have it. And he's still very military minded, and seems to be an old soul. You know, in that, and still a very young man. It's interesting for me to see those folks. And I grew up with a couple of those guys, and they just, it was like there was a connection. They were mm-hmm. kind of born with it. There was a connection to something much further back. Being that way, does this kind of support any beliefs in reincarnation or anything like that for you?
You know, it's something I've mused about. I think it's fun to think about that, and who knows? So there's no
right.
absolute
no
proof really. Or anything, but it's fun. I like the concept of that, like, you know, time traveling and all this mm-hmm. stuff, and that, you know, I'm just this old soul that has gone through these different periods. And why is it certain things really have a strong pull for me? Was I alive then? It's fun to think about that. You know, could be, but, you know, who knows?
Exactly.
But it just like, it just grabs me. And I know I have other friends that it same way happened to them. They heard this stuff and just grabbed them. And over the years, I've tried to almost like proselytize, like, listen to this record, you know.
Trying to convert people, and nothing.
You know, like, it doesn't spark anything. So it's just,
That's how you found your tribe. And you've got a very strong, tight-knit tribe of people in your life who get that.
Yeah, yeah.
And just being in your house, when I visit you, it's like, I just feel this, like, it just feels so good here. And I think it's because of all this, these items that were made and loved on and played with and used by people 2-3 generations ago, and there's a soul attached to that stuff. You know, it's really an amazing kind of thing.
I agree. I mean, you just see an object, just a material object that just embodies so much.
Yeah.
And I said, boy, this has a huge impact, and I, you know, just cluttered my house with this great old stuff. It's my fortress of solitude here. Is like everything that was great about this culture, you know, like I'm, you know, feel almost kind of patriotic about this. This is what great about what this country produced, you know, for the most part. Is I have also things from European culture and other cultures too, but it's mostly American and mostly from the 20th century, the first half of the 20th century, just like powerful stuff.
And whimsical.
Yeah,
I think that's the charm of okay, so you're saying, you know, it was the greatest stuff of that era.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all whimsical and fun and all to entertain and to kind of console us and tell us that it's not all that bad after all.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that there's something playful and childlike about it, you know. Yeah. And I mean, that's...
And this is during a time, this was the Depression, mm-hmm. World War I and mm-hmm. World War II, and it's just bookended by major wars.
Yeah.
They probably thought the world was going to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, they did. And then this was like a good antidote to the whole thing. And part of it is, you know, that what appeals to me, like from everything from outsider art and folk art and it, that is embodied in music and visual art both, is that it's reaching for something else that's getting out there on this other level. And a lot of it is playful, you know, like, isn't that the, I think this, like, the appeal of, like, Laurel and Hardy. It's like grown men that are acting like children. It's like they're doing childlike things. They're not, they could be childish, but it's like part of this appeal that they're childlike men living in their era and they're kind of getting through life in this kind of bumbling, silly, ridiculous, hilarious way, and you kind of relate to these guys, you know. And I feel strongly about that. You know, I admit that a lot of times I feel like I'm still 12 years old in this old man's body now. And I'm still looking at, wait a minute, I'm still the 12-year-old here, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've aged, but just on the outside, inside, I'm still like that kid.
Yeah.
And I want to maintain that forever, you know, like I
yeah.
tap into that when I can.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, may I have your attention? Here it is for all it's worth. Life is a circus, it's crazy, outrageous, it's the greatest show on earth. Three rings are going, there's always something happening. Acrobats and jugglers and the human cannonball. My face is painted, I'm here to keep you laughing, helping you smile through it all. World's a brighter place when you're laughing. I love to see your face when you smile. A stranger's just a friend waiting to happen. Inside us all, there's a wide-eyed child. Some guys are leg men, they lack those skirts flapping. That's nice, but honey, it's just body parts I see. I fell in love with you when I got you laughing. Your smile pulls the best out of me. It's hard to start a war when you're laughing. You'll like your neighbors more if you share a joke. A stranger's just a friend waiting to happen. Sharing the same big grin, we're kinfolk. No wonder I'm such a clown, it keeps you chuckling. There ain't a sweeter sound in the world than me. Hear that giggle and watch your knees buckling. Laughter is a sweet symphony. It's hard to start a war when you're laughing. You'll like your neighbors more if you share a joke. A stranger's just a friend waiting to happen. Sharing the same big grin, we're kinfolk.
Well, hey, kids. Today I'm going to share just a short excerpt from a journal entry that I was writing about being an artist and avoiding self-centeredness. I hope you like it. An artistic life is rich but self-indulgent. I approach it as if it were ice cream, a steady diet of which always proves destructive. But some here and there, good for the soul. I've looked at my life as if it were a pie chart divided up into four equal parts, and I've worked hard to keep a balance. I've balanced art with the inevitable presence of commerce, you know, having to make money, the mundane maintenance of things, and the ever-important time with the people I love. So it's art, commerce, maintenance, and relationships, and it's no easy task. If the scale is tipped too much in one way, I will experience some level of unhappiness or discontentment. The deeply thinking, passionately living artist will always have this struggle as a reward for the life they've chosen, or rather, chose them. This struggle is often overwhelming, as evidenced by the now countless suicides of writers who've wrung out their lives onto reams of paper in the attempt to understand it all as things hang precariously in this balance. Recently, I found myself sitting around with a bunch of, well, rather narcissistic musician-type folks. This was a strange group, and I just realized right away I was not among my tribe. You know what I mean? None of them were listening to anyone else. All of them were just waiting for their turn to talk or play their song. No one was interested in any kind of connection. And at one point, I looked around and I felt as if I was in a classroom for spectrum kids, you know? Like everyone had a certain level of autism or something. It was strange. And that living room kind of turned into a preschool in my mind. It just seemed like a room full of preschoolers who can do nothing but talk about themselves, incapable of connection. And I thought about balance. And I worried that these people were going to go full force into adulthood without any of the important cushion we need to face the hard stuff of life. Their self-centeredness was going to keep them cold and alone when things like empathy and kindness are the warm layers of clothes that we need to get through the winters. And there will be winters. We have one coming up on us right now. The days are getting shorter. There's a chill in the air. And we're digging through our closets for those needed layers. But it gives us balance, doesn't it? The four seasons divided perfectly in the pie chart of the year. When one starts, another ends, and on it goes. Well, you've survived another episode of Resisting Enlightenment. Congratulations. And thanks for hanging out with us. We're new around here, so please, while you're at the podcast hub of your choice, subscribe and then rate us while you're there. We need the stars. And thanks to my buddy Bob Armstrong. To learn more about him, I suggest you just Google the words Robert Armstrong cartoonist, and all the places where you can see his work will pop up and you can click on him and have a good time. Thanks, Bob. And if you can hear me, that invitation to come to Nashville and hang out still stands. You have an open invitation, my friend. I have four Northern California and Nevada Halloween shows with the full band October 24th to the 28th. Go to unhitched.com for all the details. A lot of other tour dates on there as well. Go on there and see where I might be coming back to your neck of the woods. We're playing Virginia City, Nevada, Auburn, California, Red Bluff, California, and Santa Cruz, California, just here at the end of the month in a week or so. There's going to be costumes. There's all kinds of frivolity. We always have a ball at these shows. I think this is our 15th annual Halloween run out there. I'm thinking maybe. Tell your friends. The costume theme this year is 1980s dance party. Just pick your 80s look from the post-punk new wave of the first half to the hair band look of the last half of the decade, or anything in between. Prizes for best costumes. Woodflock tickets are going fast. The early bird prices are still up for the time being. This is our 10th anniversary, and we're packing it with musical acts. If you've been talking about going to Woodflock and haven't yet, this would be the year to go. We have two field trips coming up. Details are getting put together. We don't have it up at the website yet, but we will very soon. We'll have one in Nashville in January and one in Key West, Florida in February. We're already getting interest for that. That's going to fill up fast. We'll get that up at the website at Unhitched very soon. And listeners are asking about the music on this podcast, and I guess I should have mentioned that all along. The music you hear on these episodes, it was all written and produced by me with a lot of help from my musician friends. I guess you just have to look at the liner notes on each song to see who's playing on what. Each podcast has probably no less than four different songs being featured either as background music or as the feature song in the middle. But anyways, all written by me, copyright, Primer Gray Publishing, Nashville, Tennessee, blah, 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 blah. I've made 20 albums over the last 25 years or so, and all of it is available at unhitched.com, either as a download if it's out of print, or we'll send you a good old-fashioned CD, and I'll sign it and say thanks. Let's see, also at the website is DVDs, my books, and artwork. I think that's about all I can cover here. I think we're good. Let me go down my list. Yep, we're good. All right. Thanks for hanging out with us, cousins. Take care of each other and use your powers for good. I'm Ancy McLean, and we'll see you next time on Resisting Enlightenment.
It was a fun deal. How do I begin to explain what I am? I don't.